Joey from the Libertalia Foundation. I would like to welcome everybody to the first episode of Ask the Anarchist podcast, an ongoing conversation concerning anarchy, its premises, stigmas, and common misunderstandings. Today I have with me a friend of mine and a fellow anarchist, Robbie Thayer, and I would like to welcome you, Robbie, to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joe. I don't know if you've heard that podcast, Wheels Off Liberty.
Yeah, I'm familiar with those guys over at Wheels Off Liberty.
Where's our drinks at?
Well, if you mean alcoholic drinks, we're not there yet. However, I do see a cup of water that's sitting in front of you. You got to walk before you crawl. So since this is our first podcast, we'll try to do it sober the first couple of times. And then if people can't stand us, then we'll get drunk so they really can't stand us. But anyways.
Sounds good.
But yeah, thanks for being here, Robbie. And you know, let's not waste any time. Let's get right into the show and what the show is going to be about. You know, since this is our very first podcast, we're calling it Podcast Zero, and we're calling it Zero because we're establishing the premises, and we're also going to cover why we think the show is necessary and also the foundations for the philosophy of anarchy. So first, I think it's important to establish what anarchy is. And anarchy is from the Greek anarchos, and all it means is without a ruler. Therefore, anarchy is really nothing more than the absence of domination and control of individuals, which enables them to make their own choices with their own property and to trade values with others. You know, this is not, you know, we're not trying to say that that anarchy means that there's not going to be people out there not trying to dominate or control you. That's not what we're saying. That type of concept would be a utopian concept. And, you know, in no way, shape, or form is anarchy utopian. All it is just it's a basis for creating a just society, not a utopian society. So therefore, these people that would try to dominate you or would try to control you that's still going to be out there, they would no longer be viewed as legitimate individuals conducting some sort of legitimate business.
And they wouldn't have the incentive to do that either.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we can get into that in a lot later shows when we really get into the conversation about how incentives would change in an anarchist society. You know, Bastiat calls it the seen and the unseen. And a lot of people can't wrap their – they have issues wrapping their brains around anarchy because of the unseen. They try to apply the anarchist philosophy to what they see in the experiences and things that they have now. And, you know, it's no fault there, no criticism, because that's what people do, base your opinions off the information that you have. But when we're talking about this philosophy of anarchy, it's important to point out how the incentives change. And then you can start seeing the unseen that's out there. So, yeah.
I think we should also need to kind of discuss for a second what anarchy is not.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not guys running around with black masks on, chucking bombs and causing violence everywhere they turn. I mean, it's actually the opposite of violence. It's the opposite of disorder. It's order. It's spontaneous order. It's people interacting peacefully and voluntarily with each other.
You know, one of the very first things I point out if I get involved with someone in this conversation is that anarchy is from the Greek without ruler, as I mentioned a minute ago, but chaos is from the Greek for chaos. So, you know, don't try to take anarchy and turn it into something that it's not.
If you want to call it chaos, call it chaos.
Yeah, call it chaos. So chaos is what we have now. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, so, I mean, basically what you're saying is that anarchy is the radical notion that other people are not your property. That's all it is. Nothing more and nothing less. And since we've established kind of just, you know, briefly what it is and what it isn't, let's kind of discuss now why we're doing the show and why we think it's necessary. And the first thing I like to point out is, you know, being an anarchist is in no way convenient, as you probably know, Robbie. And it's not something that you start out as or become overnight. You know, and since we're friends, we both entered the journey at different ways and at different points, but we've both been able to see one another go from where we were to where we are. So we, you know, kind of have an interesting relationship there. And, you know, I remember one of the very first things that I sent you concerning anarchy and how just up in a rage you were about it. And a lot of people start there, but when you're able to manage your emotions and you take that out of there and you sit down and you use empiricism and you use reason and you use logic and all these other things and you get your emotions under control, then you can start seeing, oh, well, maybe that's right. Maybe that is logical. Then you can start going down that path. But managing emotions is a big part of it. And because it's not convenient and because it's not something that happens overnight, it's difficult to have useful conversations about anarchy with non-anarchists in a short period of time. You and I happen to, well, we work together now and work together previously, so we were able to interact and have ongoing conversations about it. But when you meet, you know, individuals out there like we have in restaurants or wherever who happen to make a comment about the news, and which one of us has to say something.
Never fails.
Yeah. It's difficult to get a useful conversation out of it. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But a lot of times people, because they have that issue with managing their emotions, they just get upset with you and call you some names and then leave. And that's really the end of it. They may go home, you know, on the drive home, still be complaining about you and go home and complain to their significant other about the knuckleheads they met out at the bar or whatnot. But that's usually the end of it. So, you know, we're trying to get useful conversations out of this.
Yeah, come up with the questions that people commonly ask and the misconceptions about anarchy and try to explain them to the best that we can.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, that's an important thing, I think, about this podcast that I don't necessarily see in a lot of other ones. A lot of other podcasts is the podcaster sitting there, you know, telling you their opinions. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, there's a lot of value in that, especially if that person, you know, has some important things to say. But with this one, what we want to do is really get other people involved in it to where they drive the show. Mm-hmm. It's their questions that they ask. And since, you know, future shows are going to be in front of a live audience, and hopefully we can get some people down there, or they can go to the Facebook page and leave comments there. We can take those comments, we can take those questions, and then that's what's going to drive the show. And hopefully we can tie some ends up and reach some conclusions on some things. Because that's another thing, is that when you start talking about anarchy with somebody that has never heard it before, they have so many questions, and you can never finish it before they're into their next concern or their next issue about it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, let's dot our I's, cross our T's here, and then move on to the next thing. But their minds start moving so fast because they're trying to apply this new philosophy that they've never heard before or never heard it in quite the way it's being being told to them or presented to them, that their mind's going a mile a minute. And it's not going a mile a minute really because they care what you have to say. It's that they're trying to disprove you.
Yes.
And they're trying to justify their own philosophy that they have. That's what they're trying to do.
And that's not to say that we're not open to people disproving it.
Oh, absolutely. You know? By all means. I, you know, just when I get comfortable with something, I find out something new. Or just when I think that there's nowhere else to go, something else happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody presents something to me and I have to look at things in a different way. So, yeah, but, you know, that's a great point. I'm open to anything, any type of philosophy out there that, you know, is based on not dominating me. Mm-hmm. and based on a voluntary exchange, and it's not just an exchange in trade or in goods and services. It's an exchange of a relationship, of friendships, and all these other things where you're not forced and coerced and manipulated to have these relationships and to put up with these individuals out there that that are on the receiving end of that coercion, the beneficial end of that coercion and manipulation that's out there. So, you know, that, again, that's why I think this is an important conversation to have. You know, so you mentioned some of the stigmas with throwing bombs and, you know, some of those things, you know, so we want to kind of overcome some of those stigmas as well, and some of the common misunderstandings. Like I had mentioned chaos, people would say, oh, anarchy is broken out and blah, blah, blah. They immediately, it's chaos. Mm-hmm. And they don't, they have that misconception that's in there, that misunderstanding. And another one is just lack of knowledge about it. You know, a lot of people, well, not a lot of people, but most people, when they grow up, their knowledge is really what's presented to them through their families, and then most people get thrown into the public education system, and they stay there for all their maturing years, and most important years, they're thrown into that situation, so they have a lot of their knowledge is force-fed to them. And it's their parents, things from their parents, whether it's the family religion, the family traditions, whatever society and culture they happen to be in, that's what they get. And it's very few individuals break that mold, break out of that system of control in a sense where they seek out knowledge somewhere else.
Like critical thinking.
Yeah, there you go.
Something that's lacking big time.
Right. Instead of critical thinking, you're put into a box, and it, you know, whatever that box, you could be the best guy in that box, but you're still in a box. Mm-hmm. It's the people, you know, I hate to use that cliche, but it's the people who can get out of there and do the critical thinking and go say, you know what, maybe I shouldn't even be in this box in the first place. Maybe we shouldn't be able to talk about what got us in the box in the first place. Maybe it should be these other ideas. And it's those type of people. Those are few and far between. It usually takes just somebody being curious and running into something, having the courage to go out and talk to somebody or find individuals well-versed in these alternative philosophies. And then that's when, you know, you become like Neo from the Matrix when he just had that thing in the back of his head just downloading information. Yeah. That's, you know, you get excited and stuff about it. So, you know, the Ask the Anarchist podcast is just going to serve, as I said before, as an ongoing conversation about anarchy, and we're going to attempt to answer those many questions and concerns non-anarchists may have while trying to clear up any type of stigmas and misunderstandings. And there's a lot of different people calling themselves anarchists out there, too. So mm-hmm. It's important to point out that they're, just because you call yourself an anarchist doesn't really, in my opinion, doesn't really make you an anarchist.
Well, and that's what I think I was trying to point out earlier, what yeah. anarchy is not. Like,
right.
Those need to be out there so people understand that when the news says anarchists were rioting in Seattle or wherever they were, that were those people really anarchists? I mean, yeah, they have mm-hmm. they claim the anarchist title, but do they really have and understand the principles of anarchy, right. of actually not having a ruler?
Yeah.
I mean, because those people, they want to call themselves anarchy because they don't want whoever's in power to rule them because they obviously don't agree with them. But then at the very chance that they get, you're going to see that those same people just want to rule other people.
Absolutely.
They want to throw bombs at other
people.
They want to shoot other people.
Yeah.
They want to hang other people. They want to do and commit all the violence that they claim to not like. They want to use those techniques and those activities to enslave other people.
Absolutely.
Force other people to.
And you know, it's all too common in the revolutions that took place in the 20th century. You had, you know, all these revolutions taking place in Europe and South America and all over the place. But all they did is trade one system of oppression and domination for another one. Mm-hmm. That's all they did. Because even in the socialist systems like communism, those guys sitting at the top were doing pretty well and living at the expense of everyone else in the country. So they just replaced the czar and the family with a different class of ruling and dominating individuals. Same thing in, you know, what you see in Cuba with what Castro did and the revolutionary hero Che Guevara, all the things, you know. Okay, well, yeah, I can pat you on the back and applaud you for standing up against tyranny and oppression, but then when you win and you turn around and advocate your tyranny and oppression on other people, no, you're not some champion of liberty.
Typical democracy.
Yeah. and that's another common, I guess, another common misconception that individuals have. And so hopefully, you know, we're not going to solve all those problems in this very first podcast. We're just trying to get the conversation started. What's the show about? What is anarchy? What anarchy isn't? And we talked about those things. So now let's look at the premises. So we established that anarchy means without rulers. Okay, so if you don't have rulers, then how does social administration take place? How does how do you create a just system?
How does society even function?
Yeah. So that's why we're going to establish some premises. And, you know, we were talking before we started recording, and you wanted me to point out that establishing these premises now, we're giving you the premises, but we're not just going to stop there. The show's about building off these premises, and I hope that what we leave you with is an understanding of where we're coming from, but also hope that it generates a lot of questions that you may have, because this is definitely not the end-all, be-all in the conversation. This is to get the ball rolling and to also provide a framework for where we're going to work from. So I think that people that want to engage in this conversation, I think it's important for them to either read these premises that are on the info page, on the Facebook page, or to listen to this podcast. That's the whole point of it. Yeah. Listen to this, see what we're talking about, where we're coming from. Then you can say, instead of just coming in with ad hominem attacks and straw man arguments and all those other types of things, which those are really just admissions of that you've lost the argument and that there's nothing, you can't do anything.
Yeah, you don't have a valid argument.
Right. Yeah. So what do? You make fun of me because I'm fat and balding. Well, okay, but that that may be true, but that has nothing to do with the argument. So let's get into the first one. We're going to start, you know, it's going to be pretty deep, but we're going to try to stay at the surface.
What leads us to conclude that anarchy is the answer?
Right. And so the first one is that we live in an objective reality, because if it was subjective, you know, we couldn't even have this conversation, because you couldn't say that these words coming out of my mouth mean the same thing they do now 1 minute later or when you're listening to this. So it has to be objective. The center of that objective reality is the individual person. And it is the individual because the individual is the only conscious being, known conscious being right now, capable of any rational thought. Thus, the individual is the lowest common denominator of any group in which they can be a member. So the individual is the center for the objective reality.
Yeah, it's not the huge collective of the United States. It's the individuals who make up the United States.
Right, which, you know, and that brings me to the next one, which is the action axiom. Since human beings are the only conscious beings capable of rational thought, only human beings act with conceptual intentions, and since individuals are the lowest common denominator of human beings, only individuals can act. So therefore, when you read that the United States attacked Libya, that's not saying that what it would lead you to believe is that all 365 million people living in the United States packed up their bags, went to Libya, and attacked it. Mm-hmm. But that, of course, we know that didn't happen. What that title of that article should really say is that the United States federal government, members of the United States federal government, sent members of the United States armed forces to intervene in Libya. That, you know, that's more correct, because only those individuals in the federal government acted that did that, and only those certain members of the military actually went there. All the military, not every individual in the government voted or chose to do that. So you can't even say the federal government. That's why you have to say members of the federal government. So the action axiom is really important in this conversation. You know, it's also one of those things where if somebody in your family does something, that doesn't automatically mean you get blamed for it because you're related to that person. No, that person slaps you upside the head. Don't hate me. I had nothing to do with it. And it's very similar of all these things that people supposedly do on our behalf for us. And no, I didn't ask you to do that. I didn't choose you to dominate and over me and rule me. I don't want that. So stop trying to do stuff. You're saying that you're doing stuff on my behalf. Yeah. One, it's a fallacy because you can't act on my behalf. You can only act on your own. But it's kind of like that kind of spread loads some of the shame and the guilt, saying, oh, I did it because they wanted.
Too. Yeah, socializing the cost.
Yeah, there you go. So the next one is natural rights, a natural right premise. Individuals own themselves, and that means they have the sole discretion to use and destroy oneself. And the next one, because individuals own themselves, they own their labor and anything gained through the voluntary exchange of their labor. The next one is property can also be established, as in the case of land, initially through the homesteading principle or the principle of first claim and use. And I'll talk through this next one, and then I'll get into a couple of definitions that I think are important. The next one's going to be, because individuals own themselves and their property, any violation of the person or property of an individual is an unjust and thus unlawful act. So let's talk about some definitions before we move on to the next one. Initially, we talked about a ruler at the very beginning. A ruler, a person who exercises dominion or controlling powers over others without their consent. So that's the big kicker. Just because I may give Robbie power of attorney to do something for me, that was a voluntary action. So yes, he is, you know, through a legal document, has permission to do something for me since I couldn't be there. But I didn't give anybody power. I didn't give the president of the United States power of attorney to do stuff over me. That's, you know, based on 200-year-old, four pages of a 200-year-old document that I had nothing to do with.
Yeah, and it's also based on the idea of a social contract, which is completely bogus.
Yeah, because no one can show you that contract.
Yeah, nobody can show you the contract. And even if that contract did exist, I mean, who signed it? Like,
yeah, absolutely. You know, it's the same thing with the four, you know, the Constitution is nothing but four pieces of paper. It can't do anything yet. Even the guys who wrote it up didn't sign it as it was binding. They signed it as witnesses.
Yeah, witnesses.
They witnessed the drawing of it up, and they signed as a witness because they knew it couldn't stand as a... Those guys were lawyers, most of them,
yeah.
Or merchants, so they dealt with this type of thing. They knew they couldn't sign or create a contract on behalf of anyone else.
Right.
And, you know, I like to think that whole story about when Franklin... came out of the conference or convention, and the lady asked him, "Hey, Mr. Franklin, what do we have?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." See, I would like to think that what he was meant by that was, there's no way these guys are going to get away with this.
Yeah,
once they present it, they're going to realize
you
that
lost
people.
Your mind.
Yeah, they're going to. These people out here are smart enough to realize that they just had this enslaving document. That's what I like.
How can we pillage everybody?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I like to think.
I know. I happen to like Benjamin Franklin in a sense.
Yeah.
So I like what you say about that. I'm like, that's probably what he meant.
I hope that's what he meant. It didn't happen, needless to say, because people took it hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah.
Well, when you saw what happened, you know, right after it, you had Shays Rebellion, you had the Whiskey Rebellion, and all those other things. But
yeah.
Anyways, let's not get too far off track. Next one is an owner. What's an owner? We talked about owner through a few of those premises. An owner is the one who has the sole right to use, benefit from, transfer, exclude others from, and destroy his or her property. That's what an owner is. So then we threw property in there with owner. So what's property? Anything an owner has the sole right to use, benefit from, transfer, exclude others from, and destroy. It's a relationship of people to the scarce objects and routes of action that are out there. That's what owner and property is. It doesn't mean that that your mind somehow enslaves your physical body,
yeah.
and all these other
things. Yeah, you have some people who have a very weird concept of self-ownership. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, your mind. You can't own your mind. I don't know. There's
yeah,
just some different.
Yeah, it's just psychobabble.
Yeah.
I think is what it is. And, you know, these last premises that we were talking about also, we call them natural rights. And a natural right is an inalienable, self-evident, and universal freedom that's not contingent upon the legal system, customs, or beliefs of any particular culture, society, or government. That's why they're natural. I mean, as you can see, the many forms of statism that are out there, from democracy to constitutional democracies, constitutional republics, to dictatorships, and all these other different any form of socialism that's out there, they all create their own laws. So it's really not it's not about free. I mean, you're either free or you're not. You either have liberty or you don't. So if you don't have freedom and you don't have liberty, then what you're really talking about is what is your condition of not having freedom and what is your condition of not having liberty? So these authoritarian forms of government out there and these dictatorships that are out there, you have less, you know, liberty and stuff. But even in democracies and constitutional republics, you know, you may have some more. You're not as much of a slave, but you're still a slave.
Yeah,
so your degree of slavery is less, but that doesn't make you free.
Yeah.
You know, just because bad things are going on in Afghanistan, that doesn't mean that the United States is the greatest place to be and everyone's free. That's not what that means, but that's how people try to take things. And so we got a natural law. It's a rule or guideline reflecting the principle of individual sovereignty and property rights designed to protect the person and property of the individual, e.g., laws against taxation, non-agency regulation, and fiat currency. So those are natural laws.
And I think one thing to point out about natural law, natural rights, is they're universal.
Absolutely.
Like they apply to everyone at every time.
Yeah, at any given moment, past, present, and future. It's not, you know, that's like, okay, well, I can understand that 2,000 years ago, women were being stoned. I get it. I understand it. It's part of their culture. That doesn't make it right.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? So if you stone someone then or you stone them now, it's the same thing. The same rule still applies.
Yeah. As if some people aren't equal to each other.
And then we got another one, another definition called an unlaw, which is another thing from Bastiat. An unlaw is any rule or guideline that benefits one individual at the expense of another. And that's kind of like what we're getting at with the natural laws being universal, where we have all these unlaws that are contingent upon society, culture, and whatever form of government that you have. And those laws create a exploited class and then a class who benefits from that exploitation.
People living at the expense of someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, taxation is a big one here. Legal plunder, as Bastiat would call it, theft and redistribution. So in the United States, slavery was nationalized after the 1860s. So you had in the 1860s, you had a segment of the population that was 100% slaves, and then they ended slavery here was ended in that form with the chains and the bondage. And in 1913, when the
the
federal income tax law came into place, then you nationalized slavery. Mm-hmm. Okay, so maybe you only take 20% from me, so I'm 20% a slave instead of 100, but I'm still a slave.
Yeah. They figured they'd cash it in. Hey, we'll just let this many people go. And
so that's what an unlaw is. Taxation, legalized slavery, and any type of victimless crimes.
Absolutely. I mean, you got eminent domain, like all these kinds of completely anything that the government legislates is an unlaw.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
If it was a natural law, they wouldn't even need to regulate it. Sure. It would need to be upheld by some sort of justice system, which we'll get into in future podcasts. But to think that you and I wouldn't be completely equal human beings, not to say that we have the same talents and preferences and stuff like that, but have the equal right to justice and to whatever we could make of ourselves is completely absurd. Like,
right. And I think that's a good lead into the definition of government. But government is an individual or a group of individuals who employ organized power to enforce and control a coercive monopoly on purported security, a legal system, social management, and the people within a certain geographical area. I mean, that's what a government is.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can come up with all these fancy definitions for it, but look at the empirical evidence of what governments do. There's not one government that I know of where every single person within the society said, yes, we want you to act on our behalf. Because if they did, it wouldn't be a government. It would be some form of social administration or social management. That's what that would be.
They don't allow competition. Monopoly.
Yeah, and anything that they don't monopolize, or the big things anyways, they allow the so-called private sector, and I'm doing the little quotes there.
Quasi.
Yeah, the quasi-privates, or should be the quasi-public sector, but anyways, the so-called private sector to cartelize.
Yeah.
And then through these corporations, these large corporations and everything, the competition gets stemmed, so it's whatever corporation has the best lobby, or whatever cartel has the best lobby, it's going to get the...
they create unlaws to...
to benefit them, to get rid of competition and to benefit them and their special interests in whatever groups out there. I mean, you get rid of taxation, you get rid of the lobby. Well, I don't think you might not necessarily get rid of it. It would probably change because you'd have to get rid of politicians in order to get rid of the whole mess, because there would still be special interests out there trying to bribe and get politicians to do things. But you change the game at least a little bit.
Yeah.
And here's probably one of the most important premises or principles to anarchism, the anarchistic philosophy, and that's the non-aggression principle. And that's the principle, you know, it undergirds the philosophy of liberty, and it's essential for any type of peaceful human existence. And it asserts that the initiation of force or aggression is illegitimate and a violation of individual freedom. And, you know, you can simply put that as in, don't hit people and don't take their stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's just essential for peaceful human existence. It's essential for human existence.
Absolutely.
Like, in order to survive, humans have to be able to use reason, and as part of their reason is the ability to act upon that reason. Well, you go and aggress against somebody who is doing what is in their rational self best interest or self-interest, whatever, it's kind of the same thing.
Right.
You aggress against them, and you're actually depriving them of their right to live their life. And that's, to me, that's why you don't aggress against somebody. Is
right. And you know, I had something else I was going through in there, but I think what you said kind of is a great lead into the next one, is that it's the human condition. Why is all this needed? Why is, you can call this ethics, you can call it premises for a just philosophy, and you call anarchy just nothing more than the foundation for a just society. You can call it so many different things, but why is this needed? Why do we need to put this on paper? Why do we need to advocate this philosophy? And, you know, I think it's because, in my opinion, and you know, this last premise is probably maybe not a lot of anarchists could agree with this, even some of the anarchists that I deal with on a daily basis and are friends of mine. But this is, to me, and this one's really, I guess, open to debate, maybe within our circle, some individuals will look at this and have some questions about it. But that's the human condition, in my opinion, is twofold. And first, I think it's a psychological condition, and then I think it's an economic condition. And by psychological, I mean that every action or purposeful human behavior, it ought to be done in the self-interest of the individual in service of their needs. So that's the first one. And the example I was going to bring up that brought to mind when you were talking, before we led into this, when you were talking, when we were talking about the non-aggression principle, I mean, even as a kid sitting in a sandbox and you got your bucket, your shovel, and you're shoveling your sand, if somebody walked over and took your bucket or your shovel from you, what's a kid do? He naturally reacts and says, hey, that's wrong. You just took something that was mine. That's why this whole principle of self-ownership and of property and everything else is natural, because the kid, no one had to tell that kid anything. He just naturally knew that that was his, and when someone took it, it was wrong.
Yeah, I mean, because he realized, I mean, everybody, my two-year-old daughter realizes it when her brother snatches one of her toys.
Right.
That's mine. Brother, put that back. And of course, I say, hey.
Yeah, and, you know, and if while your bucket and shovel's being stolen, if they, by the way, knock you upside the head while they're leaving, I mean, it's just, and he not only did he take my bucket and shovel, he hit me too. So even kids at young ages have that natural reaction, and they know and they understand these principles. It's just parents, society, culture, and public education, government operated public education, weeds all that natural thinking out of them. And you know, when the kid starts crying because that happened, he's just simply asking or saying that his needs have not been met.
Mm-hmm.
And he, by simply crying or pointing it out, he's expressing it properly. And but all this is just, it's like kids are a washcloth, and they're full of water, which is all that natural intrinsic learning and stuff that they have. But then it just gets twisted out of them as they get older by their parents. And so, you know, it's really a failure of parents and society that, you know, fail children, and that kids grow up to go on to be politicians, because everything that they've been taught is that it's okay to exploit other people to benefit you instead of the other way around. And, you know, so those are the premises in a nutshell. There's maybe a little bit more.
I think you wanted to touch on, too, was not just the psychological condition.
Oh,
the economic condition, too. Like, in what you said, even your example there, the reason that conflicts arise is because all these resources that we have are scarce. That's yeah. that's the reason why conflict arises.
Yeah, I got a little wrapped up on the psychological stuff and forgot to go back to the economic. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the fact of scarcity. Resources and land and things are scarce. So everyone, you know, everyone that's here now is all competing for all those scarce resources. So because of scarcity, that can lead to conflict if you don't have a foundation for some sort of social administration that can tell you how to properly and justly handle
conflict.
Yeah, conflict and dealing with the fact of scarcity. And Hans Hoppe, I've heard him several times speak, and he uses this example of the Garden of Eden. He says, even in the Garden of Eden, where everything is perfect and all this, you know, there's abundance, you can go over and pick a banana off a tree, and then there's no reason for you to want my banana.
One will grow in this place.
Another banana will grow. So you may have abundant resources, but scarcity and conflict still exist in the Garden of Eden, even in this perfect thing. And the reason it does is because two individuals can't occupy the same space. Mm-hmm. So there's a scarcity of space in there. And if you wanted to be where I am and I didn't want to move, then you would have to push me out of the way. And therefore, even conflict can exist in so-called utopians. So that, you know, that's the other side of this is the economic condition that's there. And as I was saying, there's a little bit more information on the Facebook page in the info section where you can go look at it. But also, we're not here to answer every question. We can't do that in 30 minutes, 45 seconds. And what I'm hoping is that if you're listening to this, that maybe this generates more questions than what it does provide answers. So go on the Facebook page and take a look at it there. And also leave your comments and your questions there. And Facebook page is also, at least initially, going to be the place where the podcasts are uploaded and you can listen to them. So you got anything else to add, Rami?
No, I think we pretty much touched on it, just that the human condition, the psychological and the economic condition are what drives, not what drives anarchy, but the reason why anarchy is what it is.
Like, right. I mean, if you had a perfect utopian society where, and I could even, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there that you have it. I'm not going to get into how you could have it because I don't think you could.
Yeah.
But if you had a society where people's needs are constantly met and there's no scarcity, then you don't have a need for a philosophy. You don't have a need for any of this. But it just so happens that we don't live in that world. That
we live in a reality where right. those things do exist.
Right.
And there has to be a just and, I hate to say moral, because that's another thing that we'll probably talk about later on in the show, but there has to be a way for all those conflicts to be not only minimized,
right.
but justly disputed or resolved.
Yeah, you know, and speaking of the Garden of Eden, that also, you know, kind of reminds me, too, of any of all these different religions out there that specifically talk about their paradises and that once you die and the spirit goes on, that it's going to be able to live in this perfect world, you still run into these same problems.
Yeah.
Because even, you know, at some point, if you're an existing being, you're going to have needs. And I don't know how
what?
I don't know how you get around the meeting of those needs and scarcity to not have conflict. But anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think religion's a totally different podcast altogether.
Yeah,
how that ties into what this is. But I mean, you see these bumper stickers that N-O-T, not of this world. Well, no kidding. Yeah, not of this reality either. Like, you just, it I don't know, it just blows your mind sometimes.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, you know, we hope that you'll tune in. We hope that you'll go over to the Facebook page and leave some feedback. We're kind of rookies at this podcasting thing, so kind of be gentle on us. I know I sound like a redneck Mickey Mouse. I don't need anybody leaving any of those comments. I get it. I understand it.
Redneck Mickey Mouse number two.
Yeah. So we get all that. And, you know, I have neither the voice for radio or the face for TV, so that's why I podcast.
We need to get the golden voice from Detroit.
Yeah.
Or whatever, where was that guy from?
Yeah, the guy out there with the sign.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'd like to thank our hosts, Donna and Jesse of Cafe Libertalia, our humble hosts that allow us to do the podcast here at the cafe. And Robbie, I'd like to thank you for being here as well.
No, thank you for asking me to come on.
I know you're busy. I work with you, so I know you're an extremely busy guy. And to conclude, just like to remind everybody that Ask the Anarchist podcast is a project of the Libertalia Foundation. The Libertalia Foundation's main purpose is to explore and offer education in the areas of economic thought and social philosophy. For more information, you can visit the foundation at www.libertaliafoundation.org. That is spelled LIBERTALIA foundation.org. Or if you have a project you would like to have sponsored by the foundation, you can email Jesse Thomas at jthomas@libertaliafoundation.org. And just remember, anarchy is the radical notion that other people are not your property. So don't treat them as such. They say that we ain't got the style, we ain't got the class, we ain't got the tunes that's gonna put us on the map. And I'm a phony in disguise trying to make the radio. I'm an antisocial anarchist, I sound like so-and-so. They say I'm just a stupid kid, another crazy radical. Rock and roll is dead, I probably should have stayed at school. Another Generation X who somehow slipped up to the cracks. Oh, they'd love to see me fall, but I'm already on my back. So it goes, one ear, right out the other. People talking shit, but you know